filmmakers and photographers, drinking coffee and talking shit.
Welcome to Filmmakers and Photographers, Drinking Coffee and Talking Shit. In this podcast, you'll hear insights and stories from four guys, and maybe a guest, who have all come to the craft of visual media from very different starting points. I'm your host, Matt Rickman.
And I am Sean Luddy.
And I am Randy Fitzenmeier.
The one and only Chris Bell.
In this episode, we're going to talk to our very special, monumental, epic, never heard anything like him before guest.
I'm not sure I like the way you use the word Faye. Special there, but okay.
I led with special too, didn't I? Faye, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Matt Faye, I am 3 years into a business that I call Gravitation. This tagline on that is Creative Technical Communications. It's basically, I started out as a graphic designer out of a college, and then I moved here to Fort Collins, got married, did the whole career path. I haven't left since, really. I started out as a traditional design marketing firm, doing the kind of marketing that Fort Collins would afford. So it was a lot of high tech, a lot of HP work, that kind of thing. And then I started my own business about 4 years into that, called Light Source with two partners. Did that for about 9 years, sold that to my two partners, and started on my own again. Took a job then with one of my largest clients at the time after only about a year of that, and that place was called Visual Health Solutions. And there I sort of took a branch, a little bit of a break from what I had normally done. Before then, it was all just marketing, general marketing, a lot of high tech, like I said. Visual Health Solutions was all medical. So at the time, all they had were medical animators, and they brought me in to start a design department within their medical animation company. And I thought, I'm going to go there and stay for maybe 3-4 years, get their design department set up, hire some designers, and then get out, because medical's not really my thing. So I'll just pretend like I know what I'm doing around here for long enough, and then I'll exit stage left. Ended up staying for 11 years, and it was a long time. Most of the reason for that is because I had a really great team I put together, really great staff. I didn't want to leave any of those folks. But the other reason I stayed for as long as I did is I found it isn't medical that I really found a liking to. It was the idea of designing, and by designing I mean everything from motion graphics, video production, infographics, UI design, and of course all of the design work that goes into the animations that we were still doing. Creating programs for pharmaceutical companies to doctors, all that kind of stuff. What I really enjoyed about it was the technical aspect of it. We were solving technical problems, you know. Going from a marketing company as a designer, when you're sitting in a boardroom arguing with a client over the color blue, you know, and ooh, you know, subjective stuff that it's just very difficult to, sometimes frustrating, I should say, to try and nail down as to what the solution is. I've always been a mechanical person. I like solving real-world problems, you know. I've never been one of those artists who sits in his attic and paints what he feels. That's not me. I like solving real problems. And even though it was all mostly medical, there was a fair amount of science in it as well, I liked solving those kind of problems. And to bring a creative arts into a field like that was really a boondoggle for myself and the company. But after 11 years, I exited stage right again, and because I left sort of abruptly, I didn't have a game plan, I didn't have a parachute, I didn't have an idea of what I was gonna do next. I found myself kind of wandering and wondering what now, because I couldn't necessarily just go back to a marketing agency and go back to the boardroom and back to arguing about the color blue. I thought, if I'm going to do this kind of thing and keep on doing my kind of thing, I got to start my own thing again. So I did that 3 years ago. I'm now over on the north side of town, and I've got two employees now, and trying to grow, and went through the You know, it's like going back to grade school again, starting a business again. You know, I couldn't go back and tap into any of the clients that I'd worked with over those 11 years because it's just the wrong thing to do to, you know, try and steal your former employees' companies, clients. And so I had to start from scratch. And it was a good challenge because I had to, you know, really just pick up the phone and call people one at a time. Randy was one of the people I called.
Cheers.
And I applaud you, Randy, for taking that call. Even though we didn't put that project together, it was
We tried.
We really gave it a good
start. And it's a different world now. It's a different business climate now, too, than it was back then.
3 years have changed. There's a lot that's changed in 3 years, no doubt. Yeah.
Or 11 years for that
matter. Oh, you're going way back. Yeah, we could go way back. Randy and I worked together also back at my first marketing firm Envision, it was called, wasn't it? Yeah. Randy also, by the way, if you guys don't know, actually shot my wedding too.
I did.
Much to my wife's chagrin, he did. That was the only thing she put me in charge of, was hiring the photographer, and so I called Randy. Mostly it worked out pretty well, didn't it, Randy?
That was the last wedding you ever did, right, Randy? I believe that you told me that.
That's a true statement.
Yeah.
Well, if you were to rely solely on my wife's recommendations for your next wedding gig, it's probably a good thing it was your last wedding.
There you go.
We have a couple of photos from that gig that I still are priceless to us.
Well, that's awesome.
There was just a lot of like relative wrangling and wedding etiquettes that Randy didn't necessarily, I wouldn't say was as sensitive to maybe as the ladies were, perhaps.
I'm not a wedding photographer, so that's not my strong suit.
No, yeah. I was pulling a fish out of water to do this job, and you did me a solid, and it cut
well,
down.
Well, I'm glad at least there's a few.
Really solved that problem. Chris and I go way back.
Yes.
Probably as early or not earlier as Randy. We used to work for the same
Envision,
agency, Envision as well, didn't we?
I
didn't remember what those first projects were, but we've been pals ever since.
I remember coming in there and seeing you sitting at your desk, diligently working, no-nonsense kind of guy, nose to the grindstone.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I think it was fear because of your
I
boss.
Remember that. That. The fear I do remember.
There's a good picture of you on his website, too.
I remember all the stories.
There is.
You've seen it's that? From You've back seen in those picture? Envision days.
Does it look anything remotely like me?
No, you got
your hair,
ponytail,
your hair
long
looks
hair,
a little
goatee,
different, but
really
other than
awesome.
That.
That's about it, yeah. Wow, I got to go check that out.
Yeah. Oh, on my website?
On your website.
Oh, that's true. Because when I started out and it was just me again, when I put my website together, I didn't really have, you know, just a picture of myself wasn't going to, you know, bring in the big fish, so... I came up with this
theory. So you brought Chris.
Watch it.
I this is talking shit, by the way.
Doubled his business
this
overnight.
This is talking shit.
Doubled his business. I'm glad to hear this because when I heard the title was talking shit, I listened to the first couple episodes.
They
I thought,
pretty nice.
I thought you guys were going to be talking shit about each other.
I was a little disappointed. We get in a couple jabs here.
I was a little disappointed.
Stick around.
Okay, good. Well, as long as it doesn't end up being filmmakers, photographers, drinking coffee and talking politics, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah,
amen to that.
That would be a brawl.
We don't record those.
Yeah. What else can I say? So, yeah, I've been doing it for 3 years now. I've expanded the idea of it's not just medical, but it is. I am trying to stay within this technical field, which means... I've got an oil and gas client. I've got software clients. A lot of odds and ends. It's not all, and I do have a couple of medical. I've got a client that does a brace for scoliosis. So there's a few medical device clients that I have, but they all sort of fit within this mentality of we're not just solving consumer products or consumer preference challenges. These are challenges where there are difficult concepts to try and get across. Products that are not easily explained, or sometimes products that have to be explained from a professional to a professional audience. It's like B2B, but it's a little bit more high level sometimes, in that you have to take a concept and really simplify it while keeping it technically correct, and then still finding a message that resonates within all those technical details. It's the kind of puzzle I like unraveling.
And also a lot of animation still?
Not as much as I did back at Visual Health Solutions, certainly. I don't have a full-time animator on staff anymore, but a lot of the folks I used to work with over there Some of them have gone on to do their own thing as well, and they are still well within my Rolodex. So I've used a number of them since then to put animations within the projects that we do. So I've had a couple of opportunities to do that. But it's a lot more what you would call traditional, either video pieces, motion graphics, web design, web infographics. Some of it's traditional marketing materials, but it's just aimed at a different audience, and that's kind of what I'm into.
So, Matt, you're about the most creative guy I've ever known. You come up with great ideas.
I just drank a big old cup of coffee, and I almost did a spit
The ambush is coming up.
Yeah.
So, you got all these great creative ideas. How do you communicate that to your clients? I mean, because it's not an easy thing to do well. But you obviously are good at it.
You mean to get them to understand and buy off?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I can say that the reason why I think I've gone from being a designer to being a business owner and somebody who can work with clients is that there is a real skill to that. Yeah, there really is. Mm-hmm. Over the years, you start to come up with a vocabulary that can convey conceptual ideas, right? And I've even been told, wow, we knew what we wanted, but you were able to actually verbalize it and come up with the words to say exactly what we were shooting for. And it really is. It's as you guys know, when you're in a field long enough, you learn the vocabulary of that profession. Well, when the profession is concepts, you start to learn a vocabulary that can kind of convey those ideas. And it's a way that a lot of people aren't used to thinking. So I can say things that sound, canned to myself. Not canned, but like I've said this a few times, right? And to them, they're like, wow, it's like you just made that up from scratch. And I got to go, well, no, actually. It's the first time you guys have heard things described like this. That's all.
Well, on the visual side, are you like, how do you communicate that? As far as how this, you know, you've got the concept, you've connected on that, but now we're going to get into the visual aspect of it. You don't want to invest a lot of time, share with a client, and they go, nah, I don't really like that. So how do you bridge that gap?
Depends on where we're at in the design process. If we're talking early concepts, I avoid trying to get specifics about the way it will or will not look, because I know that work hasn't been done yet. So depending on the stage we're at, we'll talk about it in different terms. Very early on, we're really talking about the objectives of the piece. I think what surprises people the most, for instance, I do a lot of branding as well still. And when you're talking about branding, you don't immediately start talking about, well, I could see this font or this color or this.
That just derails everything.
Yeah, it derails everything. It doesn't mean anything. So instead, you talk about the objectives of the piece, but even further, you start talking about the qualities that you want that piece to emote in the audience that this has to appeal to. So I think that's one of the most, interesting part about it when people say, oh, you really nailed it there with the way you described it. It's because what I'm trying to describe is what we want this logo, identity, or whatever to mean to that audience. And then you're really talking about qualities that are not inherent in the logo, but that logo or that branding will convey when that logo or branding is seen. Mm-hmm. And that's easy to do because you kind of have an idea of what you want that identity to accomplish. It's an identity is basically a persona of the company. Mm-hmm. And so if you can define that persona and get that niche that you want that company to fall into or identify with, then designing the logo is really a matter of designing it until it fits into that box that you've pre-created conceptually, right? There you go. See how I can wax on like that?
So I have a question for you, Mr.
Sure.
Fay. So you've talked about how in the medical and technical space, it's problem solving, and you like that. It's a lot less subjective. What else have you noticed is a difference between those types of clients in that space versus your marketing clients or your business clients who they may want something just because it looks cool or whatever? Like, what are those differences? What are the greatest differences you see?
We'll go back to the early stages of this when I first started working for that medical biovisualization company, because that's where it was. Those differences were most stark to me. In the marketing field, you would design something conceptually, and if we were doing a branding or an ad or something like that, we would design 5, 6, 7, 10, and then internally narrow that down to 4 that we liked. I'm using air quotes here. You know, a lot of subjective qualities, and then we would put that in front of the client, and they would narrow it down or try and combine 3 of the 4. And so we were doing a lot of versions of the finished product in order to find the finished product. When we're doing an animation, a 3D animation especially, that requires an animator to sit down and spend an enormous amount of time and energy animating, you don't do 3, you do 1, right? So that was the biggest difference. Another big difference was the process in getting to that 1. You have to do the homework on those early stages. You've got to get the objectives correct first, then you've got to get the story written correct, and then you've got to do a storyboard based on that story. And all of that stuff has to be approved and locked down. So as you're going down the funnel, you're literally doing 1 of these things until it's perfect. Mm-hmm. You're not doing 5 of them and choosing which one on a whim. So that was one of the biggest differences. The other big difference was I went in with all of my what's important to me filters, right? And what was important to me was, does it look awesome? You know, is it cool? Are we going to like it? What's going to move quickly? What's going to appeal? All those things, right? I didn't think for one iota whether or not that MOA animation had to actually be technically correct, you know, that the method of action actually was sign-offable by the corporate lawyers that this is the way that drug actually functions. And when you're talking about biology, it can sometimes be these really complicated paths of cell interaction and, you know, and receptor sites opening it up. And I would always want to just cut that story down. Oh, that's boring. Come on, let's cut it down to the essentials. And I would constantly get this from my science advisor. You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't put the spleen on the left. You can't cut from there to there. You can't skip these steps. That is not technically correct. So being technically correct was a real challenge. And I think one of the reasons why I ended up doing as long as I did and was relatively successful was what they couldn't do as technically correct people was find the story within all those technical details, right? I had a way of being able to say, well, okay, it's true that you have to go through these 5 steps. And I know for a fact we're going to lose our audience at step 3. So instead, we're going to define these 5 steps as something more condensed, something more hypothetical in order to get from point A to point Q, right? Mm-hmm. And being able to, you know, find those solutions, that's the kind of problem solving that I really liked.
So you don't lose them time-wise, but you still make it past the attorneys.
You don't lose
attorneys.
Them. You get the important
and the
points, and you also find a way to still make it technically correct. A lot of languaging, finagling, a lot of, well, if we can't say that, if we can't do it this way, then what if we did this, if we represented this entire stage as a symbol instead of all these in individual parts, then suddenly, well, I guess that's technically correct. And so, yeah. That's some of the differences.
What's your approach for getting all that information and understanding it from your client? Because, you know, Matt and I, we also serve industries and markets, you know, with Informa that we don't necessarily know anything about. Electrical engineering, for example. I don't know anything about electrical engineering, probably the farthest from it than anybody could know. But we have to write video scripts for these things, marketing copy for these things. So what's your process for picking the client's brain, understanding holistically what that, all the information that needs
Wouldn't
to be in
called
there,
the,
so you're not blindsided after having done, you know, you worked out this thing and you think it's there, and then they say, oh, but where's A, B, and C? And you go, oh, we have to account for that.
Now isn't that called the discovery phase, man?
Yes,
so, yeah,
it is.
Talk about your process for the discovery phase.
The discovery phase is oftentimes, you know, part of the work phase, too. You know, it is getting the work done. It's actually sitting down and doing the do. And it is meaning that we're not going to do this all at shop and then take it to the client when it's all done and pull back the curtain and go, ta-da! That would be a grave, grave error. We are checking with the client as we build every single step and every single stage in order to make sure that we're really finding the story there. But the other aspect of that is we don't always know, and it does take a lot of homework, and it does take a lot of building as you go. I learn a lot when I take on a project that is in a technical area that I don't know yet. And so I've got three clients now that I've been with this entire 3 years that I've been doing this that are my main biggest clients right now. And the reason why I'm still working with them is because they've invested so much in me and me learning and knowing what it is they do and how it's done, that instead of taking 4 weeks to do a project, now we can do a project in 1 week because not so much of it is my own learning curve. Mm-hmm. That helps a lot.
Yeah, there's something to be said.
There's no shortcut. Yeah,
there's something to be said about working in a very specific niche for what you do as far as a creative. I actually used to work at a marketing agency that specialized in dental laboratory marketing, and I didn't even know what a dental laboratory was before I worked there. And one of the value propositions that they had was you can go to other agencies. Sure, they might be cheaper, they may have bigger teams, more resources, but the one thing they don't have is the in-depth, intimate knowledge of your industry that we have. You don't have to educate us. You don't have to spend the time to catch us up to speed. We know these things. We know your audience. And so that was a really big thing for them. So really interesting.
That's true. Yeah. But you know what the flip side of this coin is? There's actually an advantage sometimes in naivete,
mm-hmm.
meaning if I don't know their product as well as they do or their story as well as they do, I became a really good filter for that story. It means that I'm the naive user now. It means that if they can explain it to me and to the point where I can now understand it, well, then we've sort of solved the problem of how do you explain it to an idiot,
mm-hmm.
because I'm playing that role, right? In fact, as time goes on and I become more and more familiar with it, I can sometimes fall in the trap of being on the inside and being one of the insiders who understands this. And I start taking my audience's knowledge for granted. Mm. And I start making assumptions that are preconceived mm-hmm. notions that I now have. There was an advantage, especially when I started at Visual Health Solutions, as being the guy in the room they had to explain it to. Because that's when I could take all that complex information and find the points that meant something to somebody who was hearing it for the first time.
Yeah, and so, see something they may not see in their product. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, Matt, so what's some simple things we can do as filmmakers and photographers to up our game? But design... wise.
I would be so out of my league telling you guys what to do. I know as filmmakers and photographers. Don't put me in that position. I would maybe have to tap into my experience working with you, especially Chris. We've done a lot of projects together, a lot of traveling, and shot a lot of pieces.
Yep.
I feel like I've learned more from you than vice versa. I gotta say, because
well, of course you have.
Well,
welcome to filmmakers and photographers drinking coffee and kissing ass.
Yes. Trying to throw you a bone, Chris. Nice jumping down on that one.
It's funny because I haven't learned anything from Chris. There we go. Back to the
this
chat.
Is also obvious to me.
Who's Chris?
And Randy just showed up. Welcome, Randy. He's our other guest today on the podcast.
Well, so when you're working with me or other folks, I mean, what's some good advice, for communicating with you and achieving the end game, because I know even we've worked together, we've gotten off track just a little bit and then we jump back on track and things like that. And, most of the time we are on track, but, is there anything come to mind?
I would say the biggest advantage that we've had is that you've got to be a willing collaborator.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's been sort of our key to success.
Yeah.
If you can't share an idea, you can't work together on that idea. There's just no way, right? And if you're just single tracked on what you think it should be or what you would want it to be or how to get it done, all that kind of stuff, you're not open for collaboration. It's not going to come together. Then you're just hiring someone to push things around, essentially.
Right.
So it's one of the things I've appreciated about working with people that I'm comfortable working with, is that I can say, I have no idea what to do, right?
Yeah, you could also say that idea sucks.
Yeah, that's true. And we both said that to each other from time to time. And it works just fine because we're sort of in the same boat. It helps to sort of know that when you're solving problems, it is a risky and an unknown. You're going into the void. You don't always have all the answers going in. You try and come as prepared as possible, but you're really just going into the void.
Yeah.
With clients, we're trying to project this aura of, we got this. We know exactly what we're doing. And if they ask a question, we better have an answer, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they're not in earshot, Chris and I can turn back. I don't know what the fuck to do. I got no clue. What do I do?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
But that's how you get it accomplished and get good stuff done.
It's true.
But the secret is, like, Sean, you might come at it from this angle. How do you get to that point with a client to where you feel comfortable enough to where you can do that?
Yeah.
That takes time.
Yeah, that's the relationship part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I always fall back on is, at least I probably know more about this than they do. I can maybe get away with looking like an expert just because I know a little more about this than they do. That always helps. You got to have confidence. You have to believe that, you know, you have something to add to this, or else you really are sunk. And so being able to admit we're not always walking in with the right answer, we can do that because we know how this sausage is made.
Yeah.
But with a client, you have to come in with a certain amount of confidence. But there's also a big value too with a client in admitting when you just don't have that answer yet. You don't know.
Absolutely. You
know, and being completely honest about that.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. You don't want to come across as being, I've got this all figured out. There's one road and one road only. They like the fact that it's a discovery process, you know, and that we're figuring this out and we're building it as we go.
Just flat out honesty.
If things don't work. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. People want you to be genuine. Matt and I were talking about this the other day that, you know, we work in a very corporate environment where you have, you know, 150 people in any given month that you're interfacing with on various projects. And when you first meet somebody, you have this almost this instinct to put on the professional, hello, how's everybody doing? You know, thanks for making some time today. And once you get into a project and you can kind of take back some of the facade and you can just be like, and I don't know, I think that stock clip is awful, honestly. And you can be real with each other.
Yeah.
Then the project not only becomes more fun, but I do think you get a better result at the end because you aren't afraid to, like you said, tell somebody, I don't think that's very good, or here's why I don't think that'll work. Whereas when you try and put on that facade of, oh, we're all professionals, we're all on the same team, and, you know, people just really appreciate you being genuine, I think. And there's something to that.
The other thing that helps too, if you've got a client that you disagree with, they've got an idea in the back of your head, you know it's a stinker, right? And yet you don't want to come across as not being collaborative and the client is always right, et cetera, et cetera. One trick I found is that you break out of talking about the solution itself and you begin talking about the effect that you're going after and you start questioning that effect. You know, well, what we're really trying to do in this scene is to do this and this and this. Now, this idea, as I see it, accomplishes this, this, and this, and you're staying positive about the idea, but you're like, I wonder if it really accomplishes what we were after as well as it could. What if we... And then they're not feeling attacked. They don't just, you know, just to come around with it. That idea, you know, smelled like dung. You can really massage it back on track by getting it to them to feel like you're discovering the right solution together rather than just, you know, immediately dispatching with their ideas.
Yeah. What kind of stuff do you like to do creatively that's not what you do normally for your work? Like,
yeah, what do you do for yourself?
Yeah, what do you do
for
yourself?
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. What are your passion creative projects?
Chris knows this, but I'm a movie buff. Love the movies.
Like 100-inch television screens.
That was years ago, Randy. I got rid of that. I've got the big HD projector theater in the basement.
Oh, boy.
Nice. Widescreen sound system. Blu-rays, forget that streaming compressed nonsense crap. Give me the all, every single pixel like that deserves.
Blu-rays are compressed, but
of course they are. But it's not like I don't have a film projector. I'm sorry, Matt.
Okay, Matt. Yeah, save it for Geeky Tech Show.
Yeah. No, it's as good as it can be, and
it is pretty stunning. It's like going, it's the closest thing you'll get to going to a theater. In fact, it's probably better than a lot of theaters in town just because they project it onto such a large screen.
Yeah.
And so when are you going to invite us all over?
Did you build it yourself?
Yeah, at the time? I did.
In the home, yeah.
My 50th birthday present. I finally said to my wife, it's time. the equipment has gone down in price, the quality and the price have sort of met a level where I can actually do this. And so she, God bless her, granted that green light, and off I went.
Yeah, and we should also mention he has theater seating.
Nice.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But my real passion, too, not just movies. Cars. And I say movies, I don't say film. Okay, some of the
pictures.
My favorites could
What's
be qualified
favorite
as a
What's
film.
What's your picture show?
Yeah, but I like movies. But I also like 3D. I'm kind of a
Oh, cool.
Can you still buy
as far as, like,
3D
movies?
I'm sad about this, but no.
Yes,
those
I have a 3D
Blu-ray
player.
I do too.
And
a 3D TV.
And I like it.
Yeah.
I actually do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Harold and Kumar's Very 3D Christmas is a staple in my house with the glasses.
I can't speak to that film.
It might be a little lowbrow for you, Matt, but
it's a fad.
I've got some lowbrow 3Ds in my collection, believe me. Piranha 3D. I can tell you, it's a winner.
Those fish fly at you. You know, you feel like you're getting wet.
Yeah. And you're still playing the lottery, so when you win, you're going to get yourself your own personal IMAX theater?
That's right. I could. Yeah. No, but the projector I have, it's a Sony ES, and it has the active glasses, not the passive darker sunglasses glasses, but the ones that have the electronic shutter in them. Mm-hmm. And that 3D technology on that really is better than the 3D you can get in the theater. Wow. So I get stunning 3D at home. And I love 3D. I just love it. And I can't get enough of it. And that they are now eliminating that for the sake of this. Give me a break, 4K. Films should not be done in 4K. There's no reason for that. Have you watched The Godfather in 4K?
It's 8K, actually.
It's a ridiculous endeavor. The whole movie is shot almost in complete darkness with all kinds of lighting effects and all that kind of stuff, to the where a high-resolution version of a classic like that is pointless.
So you don't care that Japan is broadcasting in 8K?
8K? No, that's just nonsense.
We can't even see an 8K, apparently. I was at one of my things for our next show gets into the new, like, OLED, you know, 8K Samsung 96-inch TVs, and it's like, your eyes don't even know what to do with that.
I imagine there's venues for that if you're projecting it on a really, really large screen.
Correct.
Yeah. There has to be some movies.
Size
it's like
distance.
Resolution and print. You know what I mean? Why print a 300 DPI one-by-one image, you don't even need, you know.
You can go buy a little sharp camera. Well, it's coming out soon. It's just a little sharp camera that's 8K.
Oh, wow. They just launched that, didn't they?
Oh, did they?
They snuck it in at CES this year.
Yeah, that's where
like that.
I saw it.
Okay,
from that. Yeah. So, hey, it's out there.
Wow. Well, there are some movies that I think would benefit from 4K. Things that are like high-tech sci-fi with lots of computer graphics that are rendered really, really sharply and are meant to be sharp.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard interviews with cinematographers who just roll their eyes at the 4K because they say the first thing they do after they shoot it in 4K is put it into the production lab and drop a little bit of softening filter on that damn thing because they don't want to see all that detail. You know?
Well, it's true. My mother... She, bless her heart, she sees like some of these really high refresh rate TVs and everything in like, you know, HD.
Yeah, that's a whole other
says,
topic.
It almost,
that's a whole
it almost,
thing. Yeah.
It almost feels like it's fake. She goes, it doesn't
like
feel
news.
Hate it.
Yeah,
news
or soap like opera. The special effects. Like, you know, if you can see the paint around the dude's eyes, you lose the magic.
Sharper's not always better.
Yeah, that's true.
But the reason I can't buy,
I want a videotape of magic show in 8K at 200 frames per second, so I can see how they do the tricks.
But the reason I brought it up under the topic of what do I like to do is I actually like to produce things in 3D. I've shot 3D movies. Has anyone here shot a 3D movie?
How do you do? No. Do you have a new
Look at
camera
me, the better badass filmmaker around the table. The only one who's shot in 3D.
Done something new.
Yeah, but have you seen his 3D movie? I mean, it's something to behold.
Yeah, I started experimenting with it.
Being very kind.
No.
So, do you need a special camera for that?
No, I started just experimenting with it early on. And believe it or not, I did it with a couple of old iPhones. What I did was I created a wooden mounting rack, and then I took two iPhones of the same resolution and technical specs, and I flipped one of them upside down so I could get them that prerequisite 3.5 inches apart that your eyes are, and I built a rig for it, and I basically hit record on both of them at the same time. And then most of the work was then in After Effects in order to be able to get those images to work together again. We could do a whole podcast on this 3D, so I won't.
One of our recent clients, just out of a whim, just happened to say near the end of the meeting, you know, I wonder if we did this cartoon in 3D. And Matt was like, oh my God, we are going to do that. And he did, and it turned out really well.
The final end of that was
that's really cool.
ViewMaster, because it has two eyes.
I mentioned that before.
Yeah, okay.
Why would you do a ViewMaster in 2D? That's ridonkulous.
Yeah. That's funny.
So, Matt, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do?
Old. I want to be old. I want to be done. I want to get off this treadmill. That's what I want to do. No, I would like to get to the point where, like everybody, that retirement is sort of a financial security thing. I'm not looking for a retirement that is me giving up what I do. I actually really enjoy what I do.
Yeah,
I like getting up in the work. I like getting up in the morning and doing what I do. I can't imagine retiring from it just because I'm trying to get away from it. That's not it at all. Getting to the point where I have some freedom and some financial freedom to do exactly the projects I want to do and not necessarily constantly be tied to a client's objectives, well, that would be a bonus. That would be great. But I like doing what I'm doing. So I imagine dabbling in it until the last day. There's no retirement. Retirement. That's what. Why would I do that? I guess the home theater, that's why I would do it.
Amen.
More time to make 3D movies.
Yeah, maybe. Good ones.
Cool. Well, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure to sit down with you all, especially our guest, Mr. Fay.
Yes, thank you, Matt.
Thank
you, guys. It's good seeing you all and meeting you, Sean. It's been fun.
Yeah, cheers. For those of you brave enough to listen to this podcast, please make sure you've subscribed on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share it with your friends and colleagues and go out and make something. On the next episode, we're going to talk about failure, times in our careers where we've really fucked up.
Well, I should stick around for that one.
And how we all learned from it.
Filmmakers and photographers, drinking coffee and talking shit.